Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, June 8, 2023. The political advisor of the commander of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces says the group has captured an ammunition factory in Sudan.
This is the biggest factory for bullets, for weapons, and also the biggest storage for SAF in Khartoum. This is the strategic storage for SAF, from weapons, from bullets, from all equipment.
And South Sudan is cracking down on illegal holders of diplomatic passports.
Our passports are becoming something to laugh at across the world. If you travel with 30 South Sudanese, 20 of them have diplomatic, official, or a special passport. There are specific categories supposed to have a diplomatic passport.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The paramilitary rapid support forces announced Wednesday their forces have captured Sudan's biggest ammunition depot in Khartoum. RSF's political advisor Yusuf Izzat confirmed that forces loyal to General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo captured Yurmouk military factory for ammunition. Izzat says the Sudan armed forces are desperately trying to consolidate their positions in and around Khartoum for future negotiations.
RSF controlling 90% of Khartoum, and maybe today after they controlling the military industrialization is almost like 95%. That's the current situation in the ground.
I was watching a video of RSF saying that they are in charge of Yurmouk. What is the significant importance of Yurmouk?
This is the biggest factory for bullets, for weapons, and also the biggest storage for SAF in Khartoum. This is the strategic storage for SAF, from weapons, from bullets, from all equipment.
So with this situation where you're telling me that RSF is control of strategic sites around Khartoum, how does that impact on the talks in Jeddah?
SAF, they trying to get some power in the table of the negotiation. They don't want to continue in the talks until they get some strategic places in Khartoum back. And that's how, why they pumping, why they attacking by air force. That's why they left the negotiation table, because they want better situation in Khartoum before they come to the negotiation. You know that.
Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations spoke to Al Hurra, which is our sister network. And he told Al Hurra that Sudan government is willing to negotiate, but they cannot negotiate in the backdrop of a situation where they are being attacked left and right. And they're saying RSF is not interested in any peaceful settlement. How do you react to that?
There is no negotiation between something called government. There is no involvement for any kind of Minister of Foreign Affairs or those who are diplomatic in New York. There is no negotiation with them. And those who want to continue here because they are from old regime, and they want to come back to the power, and they want RSF to sit with them as a government and RSF as rebels, and that will never happen.
Let's talk about the civilians who are in Khartoum. I mean, the situation that we're hearing from aid agencies in Khartoum, it's desperate. There are people who have been trapped for quite a long time. There are people who are sick, who don't get medicine. There are people who have no water, who have no food.
RSF is trying to help people in the ground, RSF distributing some food, but that's why we came to Jeddah. The first thing in Jeddah was the humanitarian issue, and we're looking for aid, and we're looking to open the airports and the ports and everywhere for the aid. That's the reason for Jeddah negotiation. You know, my friend, this is war. A war means that the civilian will suffering, and that's what happening in Khartoum. And those who started the war, Al-Burhan and his supporters from the Islamists, they knew that what is going to happen in Khartoum when they started the war. So they are responsible for all this happening in Khartoum.
The Sudanese who have been speaking are also saying that RSF is embedded within residential areas.
No, that's totally not true. RSF controlling all Khartoum. That means the south base, the schools, and everywhere. Why they go to the residential house to hide from what? That's all the all is war propaganda. It's not true. My Islamist leaders in Sudan, they have nice houses. They have everything in Khartoum, like fancy cars. Did you see any house that's attacked by RSF or by any forces? What is war? Is war always there's a propaganda, and it's hard to get to the truth because the media is not coming to Khartoum to know the truth.
But Yusuf, it's hard. How do I go to Khartoum when the RSF is in control of the airport? No plane is landing in Khartoum. I would like to cover this story, but
why don't come through Port Sudan and there's road and use any bus or something? You come to Khartoum. All roads to Khartoum is open. All the civilians leaving Khartoum peacefully and come to Khartoum whenever they want. So the airport is not the only way to get to Khartoum.
And when is this going to end? You have been on a diplomatic tour. You went to Juba, you went to Kenya, you went to other countries talking about what? When is this going to end? Everybody's asking.
And we're seeking political solution. RSF was supporting a process. Clearly, and even South General Commander signed that framework agreement, and there's a date fixed to in 1st of April, we should sign the final agreement and hand the power to civilians. So that's why the war is started, because they're trying to stop that process. So we have to go back to the political process, because the only solution for this conflict is a political solution. There's no other way, my friend.
That's Yusuf Izzat, a political advisor of General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, leader of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces. He spoke to me via a messaging app from a disclosed location on Wednesday. Sudan's permanent representative to the United Nations, Al-Harith Idris, called on Saudi Arabia and the United States to put pressure on the rapid support forces to abide by the results of the indirect negotiations with the army in Jeddah. Idris said in an interview with VOA's sister Al-Hurra Arabic TV channel on Tuesday that Sudanese army have reservations about continuing negotiations as long as the rapid support forces do not abide by the ceasefire. An official with a group calling itself General Coordination of the Refugees and Internal Displaced Persons in Darfur says he is worried about the safety and security of civilians following reports of fighting between Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Adam Rijal says dozens of civilians have been killed, scores of others injured, and thousands have been displaced. He's speaking to this program via a messaging application from Nertiti of Central Darfur State. Rijal says hundreds of families who fled recent fighting in Al Janina arrived in the area in what he described as miserable condition.
There are no food commodities, there is no water, and there are no life-saving medicines. The town has been locked since May 19th, and the town seemingly remains as a disaster area.
The United Nations Security Council condemned all attacks on the civilian population, UN and associated personnel and humanitarian actors, and the looting of humanitarian supplies. Rijal says many of the displaced need required psychological help.
Most of those who arrived from El Geneina are extremely traumatized and are unable to focus. All of them describe the situation as disturbed and unbelievable because all necessities of life are cut off.
According to the Sudanese Commission for Refugees, an estimated 150,000 refugees have left Khartoum and fled to White Nile, Gadarif, Kassala, and Jazeera states and Port Sudan. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, says clashes between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces have continued for over 7 weeks, with fighting reported in Khartoum, El Obeid, and different parts of Darfur since mid-April. In a statement issued Tuesday, UN OCHA said at least 780 people have been killed and about 5,800 injured across the country, according to the Federal Ministry of Health. IDPs in Darfur say they are concerned about the escalation of fighting in El Janeno of West Darfur and Khartoum in North Darfur State. Rijal says it is unfortunate that civilians in Darfur are subjected to years of displacement with no hope for restoring stability soon.
People who are killed in Darfur within the past days are even more than those who have been killed in Khartoum since the beginning of the fighting. A majority of civilians in Darfur, or 90% of the people, are now displaced.
Rijal calls on Sudan's military factions to protect civilians and allow a safe passage out of the fighting zones. UN OCHA says access to basic services, including healthcare, continues to be severely hampered by the conflict. At least 46 attacks on healthcare have been verified by the World Health Organization since April 15th. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Still on affairs of internal displaced persons, the United Nations mission in South Sudan says three people were killed and more than 20 others injured following renewed fighting between two communities at a UN-run protection of civilian sites in Malakal on Thursday. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In a statement released Thursday, the United Nations Mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, described the intercommunal fighting in Malakal POC site as deadly. Ben Malor, the UNMISS communications chief, says fighting broke out in the camp Thursday morning after one person was stabbed.
Initial reports indicate that at least three persons have been killed as of Thursday early afternoon and more than 20 injured, with some of them receiving treatment at the mission's hospital.
Malor says UNMISS has deployed military and police personnel in the area to deter further clashes in the camp. He says UNMISS is also engaging with the leaders of the various communities sheltering at the POC site, as well as the state government, to restore calm and order. The UNMISS communications chief is calling on the communities involved in the clashes to cease any violence.
UNMISS regrets the loss of lives and injuries to civilians and calls for an immediate halt to the fighting so that the United Nations can continue to protect vulnerable families and de-escalate tensions.
Both Wing Diu, one of the victims of the violence, told this program the conflict has been brewing in the camp since early last week.
Yesterday night, we don't know what was happening. This morning, our people who are working with the UN want to work. One of them was beaten to death, and this was what is the starting point of our fighting today. Fighting is rapid and people are fighting.
Dio is calling on the government to de-escalate the violence, adding that many families who depend on UN for protection are now vulnerable.
The situation is not good. Many people die, and more violent. All the IDP, their properties, and the one running without anything, everything we left there. And they start burning our water since we are still there inside.
One IDP who spoke to South Sudan in Focus on condition of anonymity for fears for his safety says fighting is still raging in the area.
So I'm not ready to talk to you now. So no situation, it is not normal. Yeah, we have seen some of those groups, they want to come inside again.
The Troika countries of the United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway have issued a statement expressing deep concern over the reports of the fighting and killing. The Troika says, quote, "We are saddened by reports of casualties, including of both deaths and injuries. We call for calm and restraint and urge all those in a position to influence the communities involved to take all appropriate steps to end the violence," end of quote. The POC site in Malakal is hosting thousands of displaced people seeking protection after the outbreak of South Sudan's 2013 conflict. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese lawmaker says parties that signed the revitalized peace agreement are sleeping on the job. Find out why after the break.
think. People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Tell me about your favorite person.
My favorite person is my best friend. And we've been best friends since when we're children. And we've grown up. We are in tertiary level and we are still very close and good friends.
My favorite person is my friend. And she's a lady who really knows her worth. She knows her values. She stands for her values and all. She doesn't compromise.
My mom is my favorite person. She inspires me. She gives me the courage to do anything that I want.
Me, I'm a fan of basketball. I play basketball. And the person I like and impresses me too much is LeBron James. I follow him so much and I like his game.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A new report by the South Sudan's peace monitoring body, the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, says the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement is moving at a slow pace. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Stanislaus Jadawani, the chairperson of the Committee on Peace and Reconciliation at the National Legislative Assembly, says South Sudan's leaders have done very little to create awareness on the status of the implementation of the peace deal. Wani says grantors of the deal are yet to pressure the signatories of the 2018 agreement to make progress.
The committee also noted from the IGM report that none of the concerned bodies institutions, for example, National Pre-Transitional Committee, NPTC, National Minister of Peace Building, and high-level committee that prepared the roadmaps and tasks with implementation of R-Access have reported on the status of implementation of the peace agreement.
Josephine Lagu is the chairperson of the South Sudan Opposition's Alliance. Lagu disputes the RJMEC report, saying the parties implementing the peace agreement are on track.
The parties have actually, tried their best to ensure that the agreement is implemented timely. Unfortunately, it couldn't happen. But also, the parties also sat together and, I believe, made the correct decision to extend the period of implementation so that at least, we can complete the implementation and then go for election. The country is a post-conflict country and rebuilding trust cannot be done overnight.
Martin Ilia Lomoro, South Sudan's Minister for Cabinet Affairs, admitted that parties to the deal are facing financial limitations. Lomoro adds that he believes parties are working to beat the December 2024 deadline for elections as is stipulated in the country's roadmap for the extension of the transitional period.
We just finished the conference on Chapter 5, and the bill for the establishment of the Commission of Truth and Reconciliation and Healing, as well as the Compensation Reparation Authority, is being reviewed in line with the experiences and lessons learned from the conference. So that's moving on. We can say with confidence that Chapter 5 is nearly 90% done.
Pogboth Balwang is the SPLM-IO Director for Information. He says RJMEC's report is accurate.
Part of the slowness of the implementation of the agreement is a part of the SPLM-IG. Because President Talpa is the pen holder, is the one that issuing the decree, is the one that has the resources, and is the one that is responsible also to release the resources to implement the peace agreement. We don't have that leverage as an SPLM-IO in the presence of our chairman even though he is the first vice president of the country.
The RJMEC report notes that the parties to the peace agreement are not cooperating with each other to implement the deal. The report says that parties should exert more efforts to expedite and complete the unification and redeployment of all the forces in the country. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
From Bor, we move back to Juba, where South Sudan's acting foreign minister says the government is withdrawing thousands of diplomatic passports issued to South Sudanese without proper procedure. Deng Dao Deng says former government officials holding diplomatic passports should obtain clearance from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs to avoid travel ban at Juba International Airport. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Deng Dao Deng says immigration officials issued diplomatic passports to some South Sudanese who are not entitled to diplomatic privileges. Deng says his office will address the abuse of diplomatic rights in South Sudan.
Our passports are becoming something to laugh at across the world. If you travel with 30 South Sudanese, 20 of them have diplomatic, official, or a special passport. There are specific categories supposed to have a diplomatic passport. We will put them into a newspaper. Who are supposed to have a special passport? The category is defined by law. Who are supposed to hold official passport? They are defined by law. So I really want to take this opportunity to inform our public and to ask our people to help us cleaning the image of the country.
A source within South Sudan's Foreign Service who is not authorized to speak to the media said under South Sudan's Diplomatic Act, passports are issued by directives from the foreign minister and should be surrendered once the person is relieved of his or her duties or after completing a foreign mission. Deng says South Sudan has approximately 400,000 civil servants and that more than 2,000 are holding diplomatic, official and special passports.
Any former official or any other person that have got this particular passport by one way or another, you are directed and requested to return this passport to the following institution. If you are in Juba, you surrender this particular passport, whether it is expired, and you have no any official title to hold that passport, to give it back to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to the Director General of Protocol. That is very important. We also encourage our citizens that are holding this passport to surrender them to the Director of Nationality and Migration in Juba, or in case of states, you can surrender this passport to the Office of the Governor and to the Immigration Office.
According to the South Sudan Diplomatic Regulation Consular Service Act 2011 and 2014, diplomatic passport is special passport and official passport are issued to diplomats, government officials and the presidency. Deng says some South Sudanese who use illegal ways to obtain diplomatic passport are creating problems across the world.
We directed our office at the airport, the Office of Migration at airport, and the Office of Security at airport. If you don't have clearance from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, that passport will be taken from you. We don't want any embarrassment in the last minute. You take it back to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs so that we help our country to clean our image.
Minister Deng returned to South Sudan yesterday from Oslo, Norway, after attending an international conference on children. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
South Sudan's Minister for Parliamentary Affairs says young women should join politics to address some of the challenges facing women in South Sudan. Mary Nawai says some South Sudanese women are reluctant to participate in politics due to preconceived stereotypes. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Minister Nawal spoke in Juba earlier today during the launch of a UN women-funded project for enhancing leadership and political participation during the transitional period. She says active participation of women in politics could change the state of affairs in the country.
One thing I have realized about educated and qualified young women is that they don't want to join politics. You know, some women are saying, I'm a play siasa. I don't want to be a politician. But you have full right to be a politician. You have full right to raise your voice concerning what is going wrong in the country. But if you don't need to be in politics, that means we are remaining behind there. There is nowhere you can raise your voice.
The 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement is to pledge that 35% of government positions should be allocated to women. Nawal says this cannot be realized with few women showing interest in politics.
Appointments in government offices are done through political parties. And it is important that our young women join politics so that they can have stronger positions to advance women's agenda. You cannot, you know, be selling, all of you cannot be selling Kudura and Bamia outside here and you expect it to be in government position.
Some South Sudanese women politicians say there are several challenges preventing young women from joining politics in a male-dominated country. Charity Kimbo, a lawmaker in the National Legislative Assembly, says some cultural stereotypes are hindering young women from participating in politics.
If you join politics and you are a woman, you will be called so many names. They are calling names because, you know, they will say that, you know, this, they are given position because they went with this man. They will just put things that if you are in politics, you have to have relationship with other people. But it's not also sometimes from the blue. Sometimes the men forcing these young girls to be their girlfriends so that you get the position. Then girlfriends, then people outside also assume that, you know, if you are joining politics means that you are a loose girl.
The United Nations Women Advocacy Group, UN Women and UNDP, are implementing a $2 million project on women's leadership and political participation during South Sudan's transitional period from 2023 to 2025. According to the UN Women, the project will tackle barriers preventing women from participating in decision-making and political leadership, which are vital for building social cohesion and peace in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
All right. Sudanese child.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Dynamic and the song Jere Jere.
Ruka music. Akuma. Jere Jere fitunia de. Jere Jere. Sibuna si sambala. Jere Jere. Suata tatunia de. Suata suata. Nasi mutu sambala. Sana nami lotuko,
lotuko, lotuko, yeah.
Do you faba ja fibe,
fibe, fibe.
Asana nami loko ya,
loko ya, loko ya, ya.
Zere, zere, bidunia de,
zere, zere.
Sibuna si sambala,
zere, zere.
Suata tatunia de, mama,
suata.
Nasi mutu sambala,
suata.
Saki Galiana min America.
We have been listening to Dynamic and the song Jere Jere. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Do not forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Joe Jill, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.